Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, this is Pablo Zabaleta.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Kevin Phillips.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
From Backpage, I'm Martin Gregg, and this is a special edition of The Big Interview in which we preview this Saturday's Copa del Rey final between Barcelona and Valencia. Joining me from Barcelona is Graham Hunter. Graham, let's start by talking a little bit about Valencia. This has been a really, really interesting season. They're coming into this game with a fair bit of momentum. I think they won their last three or four games of the season, secured Champions League football, in the Copa del Rey final, got to the Europa League semi-final. Do you think they're taking a fair bit of momentum into this game?
Yeah, I suppose they take some momentum. It's not the first word I would reach for, because when I looked at the two games, you know, that they played against Arsenal, they were patently tired. You've got it exactly right that the way in which they sneaked through into fourth place, having been in fourth, I think, maybe once right in the first 2 weeks of the season, and then for, I don't know, the last sort of 40 minutes of the penultimate game, and they held on to that with a good win at Valladolid last week in the 38th match. It kind of means that there must be a boost of adrenaline, there must be a boost of confidence. You know, against Arsenal, they were that typical team that wanted to but couldn't. You know, they were reaching for a gear change from third to fourth, couldn't find it. Energy was part of the problem. They didn't defend particularly well. I think they conceded 7 goals across the two legs. Barcelona are a complete different animal from that Arsenal, and even though Arsenal's season has been patchy, the brutal energy that they had from the fullbacks, wingbacks, call it what you will, and the two strikers is something that Valencia don't face this weekend from Football Club Barcelona. So if I was to reach for an adjective, then I think it might be hunger, Martin, that they bring into this weekend, because they're in their centenary year. If you're looking for the little motivational sparks that might narrow the gap between a squad of slightly less quality than Football Club Barcelona's and the La Liga champions, who are going to be missing. Ter Stegen wouldn't have played, but he won't even be on the bench. Coutinho's a risk. Dembele is out. Luis Suarez is out. They are patently tired. If you look at the Liverpool defeat and if you look at the couple of games afterwards, the draw against Eibar and the fairly sort of ambulatory 2-0 win at home to Getafe, this is not a squad that's going to blow you away with intensity and power plays. So when I talk about the centenary season for Valencia, there's been a bubbling up of need. You know, we have to win this. And the thing that strikes me that might be the might be the factor that describes Los Che as they go into Saturday's game in the Benito Villamarín down in Sevilla, the Davy Neri Stadium, is that it's they've won in 40 years. They won in 1979, and in the 40 years subsequently, I think they've won maybe twice. Certainly in 99, again in 2008, in a season that was just a ridiculous season. 99 was when they were at their peak. I was at that game, again down in Sevilla, although in the Olympic Stadium where Celtic played Porto. It's a city, and I include Levante in that, it's a city that's brutally hungry to knock over the big guns. So I think they go into this, I take your point about momentum, and it would definitely be in the mix because of the league games. But I think they're driven by a hunger. That's what I'm looking to watch on the pitch.
I always love it when a team, there's calls for a manager to be sacked, and then they don't sack them, and then things turn around. And it feels like a lovely kind of antidote to this short-termism that grips modern football. And I think maybe we've seen something like that at Valencia this season, because in December things were looking pretty bleak. You know, the fans were calling for Marcelino's head, and then a strange kind of sequence of events happens. Can you kind of talk us through it? Because, you know, personally, he's involved in a car crash, isn't he? Around about Christmas time. And then from then, fortunes start to turn back in his and Valencia's favour.
You're right. And listen, let's listen to what Marcelino himself says about the Jekyll and Hyde nature of part one of the season and part two of the season. We had loads of problems when we reached the opposition goal. If I recall correctly, we scored 17 times in the first 19 matches. It's the first occasion in my entire professional career this has happened to me. It wasn't the players' attitudes. There are situations, sequences in football, which simply don't have an explanation. That was the case with us. There was absolutely no logical way to explain that we reached the halfway mark in La Liga as the team which was the second least effective in terms of scoring goals. My players were attacking, they were creating glaring chances, but we either hit the post or the keeper was brilliant, or for one reason or another, we were simply incapable of converting anything like a reasonable proportion of our clear goal opportunities. When that happens, it naturally generates uncertainty. It corrodes confidence. We drew and drew. If you look at the numbers, they define the case. First half of the season, 17 scored, 17 conceded, 23 points. We won 4 times, drew 11 and lost only 4. Then, with pretty much the same squad after Christmas, 3 guys came in, 2 left, but the 3 guys didn't have a lot of minutes. We scored 34 goals, I think 18 against. But those extra 17 goals were a complete transformation. 11 wins, 5 draws, 3 defeats. It was as simple as that. But why? Well, in the opening part of the season, frankly, the situation made me feel impotent. If you see that your team's not competitive, that they don't make chances, that they're too open or too vulnerable, the solutions for a coach are obvious. But when that's not happening, and you're still not scoring or winning, you genuinely ask yourself, damn it, what the hell is happening that we're repeatedly not able to turn draws into wins, not able to put our chances away? And there you heard, although it was my voice translating him, there you heard, back up to your point, that, you know, Valencia finished last season as kind of everybody's pet project. Aren't Valencia exciting? Look at the way that Pareco's playing, that he's been reinstated as captain and he's playing at the peak of his powers. Look at the brilliance of signing Neto from Juventus. He's been one of La Liga's top goalkeepers. And I think people looked at Rodrigo, for example, and just ahead of the World Cup as that season finished. There was a severe interest in him from Real Madrid, that he was going to be the Cristiano Ronaldo replacement instead of Mariano from Lyon. They couldn't get him because Valencia said, all right, his buyout clause is 90 million. And therefore, coming into the season and starting looking, Martin, what was the word? Sterile. I think sterile is the word. They were doing, I suppose it was like Eric Morecambe and Andre Previn. It was, you know, all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. They closed, they worked, they were hard to beat, they created goal chances and they didn't score. And when they, you know, were either hit by a sucker punch or somebody scored a good goal against them, too often they didn't have the means to turn a defeat into a draw or a draw into a victory. And therefore, they got to the turn of the season having scored, as the coach said, there fewer than a goal a game. And rather than, I mean, there was a time, you're right, particularly the Sevilla game at home, when Sevilla weren't playing really hot stuff. They came, they were 1-0 up, it was into the 92nd or the 93rd minute. Diakabi got up, they won a free kick that should never have been. They lob it into the box from the right-hand side, and Diakabi heads home for 1-1. And yet, because there had been a visit that day from the owner, Peter Lim, and because the club had decided that they'd put out one of these mosaics where you get pieces of plastic card, the backs of the plastic were all white. So, of course, all around the Mestalla, they did this pañolada that used to be done in bullfighting in Spain. And it's a strange gesture in that it can either signal extreme happiness or it can signal extreme disgust. And in this case, there was no doubt about it at all. Because people don't carry hankies. They were all using these pieces of card turned around to be white, or pieces of newspaper, or whatever they could get their hands on, plastic, white plastic bags sometimes. And all around Mestalla, there was a pañolada, that white hanky protest about, get out, this isn't good enough. Now, it was aimed, I think, at the owners, not at Marcelino. And I think Marcelino, despite, you could tell, Mestalla, as Gaisca Mendieta always explains on Viva La Liga, It's a brutal audience that will, if you're on song on the crest of the wave, they'll adore you, and if you're not, then they will barrack you, and the difference between night and day can be a space of 2 or 3 weeks of not playing well. And in that game, there was a hostility, but you know, to put flesh in the bones of what Marcelino was saying, he drives home. He's Asturian, which means I mean he's actually from in and around Gijón. The other the two big towns up there are Gijón and Oviedo. And Marcelino's driving his wife and his mother home the long road, Valencia to Asturias. And there's a wild boar leaps out. It's dark. Wild boar leaps out into the middle of the road. And in swerving to try and avoid it, and I think he clips it, the bump leaves him and his wife okay, but it leaves his relatively aged mother in bad condition. It's a terrible shock to all of them. She survives, but it's you know, the impact is not simply the impact of the car hitting the side of the road. And whether that slightly changed made him a slightly Ivan Golak, you know, I stopped to smell the roses and I stopped to smell the coffee, I don't quite know. But in the month of January, even though there was a defeat in the cup, and even though there was a defeat in the league, I think, to Alaves, things clicked. They fought back in the cup. They won late, I think it was against Valladolid, late in the game at home to Valladolid. And suddenly late goals came, Martin. That was the big thing. And little by little, because in January it wasn't suddenly release the hounds, everything's fine. It was an incremental growth, such that by the end of the season, that goal total was doubled for the same amount of games. The goals conceded was maintained, and they knocked over Real Madrid. They ate away at Getafe's lead. I think they were at one point when there was no margin for error, 10 or 12 points down. I don't think any team in the history of La Liga has left it so late to cut down such a big margin and finish in the Champions League position on the last day of the season. So there was a huge Jekyll and Hyde difference between part one of the season and part two of the season. And as Marcelino explains, had he been seeing that his team was incapable of playing football similar to last season, incapable of creating chances, he would have understood that new remedies were needed. And he'd never, ever seen in his life a team doing pretty much all the right things, but having no product, missed chances, the ball bouncing back off a defender, the ball bouncing back off the crossbar or the post. A sort of minutia of tiny details like a last pass, which is a quarter of a yard too fast. And that happened again and again and again, but gradually they erased it. And the key thing to go back to answer your point is that the players never deserted him. The players, to a man, and that's really, this is a guy who starves his players and weighs them three times a day and bans them from eating. And they admit that they have to learn to play hungry. When you're also asking them to run their butts off and to press and to be in a physically hard-working sort of mean machine 4-4-2, where it's obligatory that, for example, the fullbacks must bomb up and down, then you can lose a squad. You can lose a squad out of them being pissed off with your dietary regime, pissed, tired, just physically or even emotionally tired. And they didn't. They weren't. And when, you know, there was on the 12th of January, Marcelino was commanded to go over to, where does Peter Lim live? I think it's Singapore. And Anil Murthy, who's the delegated sort of MD by Peter Lim, the owner who is part owner with Salford City, who just got promoted into the Football League, and the ownership of Neville Brothers and Giggs and Scholes and Beckham and Butt. And Peter Lim listened to him over there, listened to Marcelino, had taken soundings from the players and said, go back and do your job. So as your point is that on the 12th of January, it was absolutely the case that a great part of the media in Spain thought Marcelino's getting his jotters, and he didn't. And they're in the cup final and they won money in the Europa League by going all the way to the semi-finals. And now they stand to win what would only be their third cup in 40 years.
I do want to talk a bit more about Marcelino's character, but just to rewind a little bit there, you were talking about the goals tally doubling from part one to part two of the season. Lots of little kind of incremental differences by the sound of it, but I mean that's astonishing in itself that they suddenly find a way to goal in such a dramatic way. I mean, can you kind of break that down a little bit more for us?
It's hard. There are two or three things. Getting rid of Batshuayi was absolutely fundamental. I hope he's a lovely guy, but my words have to be critical. I watched him round the team hotel a few times when I was down there for Champions League matches in the first half of the season. He was watching some sort of Japanese animated kids cartoon on his iPad with headphones on, wandering around the hotel. And the other players were kind of sniggering at him behind his back. I'm nothing if not a bit idiosyncratic, and people do much worse than snigger behind my back. So I'm not hanging Batshuayi out to dry for that. But given that he was playing like a dud as well on the pitch, and his feet always seemed to be bigger than he thought they were, and it was horrible to watch, and I just didn't think he was adequate. And he put Santi Mina and he put Kevin Gamero on the bench, and it didn't work for him and Rodrigo, and therefore to me he was a fly in the ointment. Football clubs are well within their rights to try players like that, and to take loan deals and say how do we find a different type of player so that teams who've got used to how we play can less well predict what we're going to be like? So fair enough, you roll the dice, but the dice fell off the table and one went under the couch and one went under the freezer and nobody could find it. And Batshuayi was a bum deal. And therefore, you look at Rodrigo not scoring and some of that was his own problem. And I can't explain the way in which it wasn't just confidence draining. He thought he was doing everything right. And I saw the despair in his face when he literally would try everything. He would miss hit it. He would hit it perfectly. He would time it. He would accelerate his run or he would hold back his run. He'd drop away from the crosser so that it had to be a diagonal cutback, or he'd go front post and nothing was working. So Batshuayi in the way, Rodrigo being absolutely, he was at a loss for what to do next. Gamero and Mina weren't playing quite regular enough. And there was a match against the Swiss side in I think it's Young Boys. I haven't done my research, but I was there, so I should know. I'm pretty sure it was Young Boys. And the Swiss Count of Mestalla and Santi Mina teamed up with Rodrigo, and suddenly you're like, yeah, that's the one. That partnership works. They're working for each other. And then gradually Gamero got form and did what, you know, he's a sort of French Carlos Bacca. You bring him on and he buzzes around, and even though he's pint size, he's still brutally nippy. And he's a goal scorer. He's in the Wissam Ben Yedder mould. Maybe does a little bit less work back than Ben Yedder does. And gradually, without any of them being prolific, gradually there was a dribble and then a stream of goals from each of the three of them. And Parejo. Parejo had started the season behaving like a ninny goat, almost getting sent off, then getting sent off, giving away penalties, missing a penalty against Juventus. He seemed to have a stone in his shoe. And I'm talking particularly the away game to Villarreal, the home game to Juventus. And there was another at Mestalla where I damned if I can remember the opponent. And if you contrast that to the Parejo from about November to May, where he's played his best football and he's led, it's been, you know, it's filthy how well he plays. His passing, his first touch, the body shape when he receives the ball, how he sees play around him, how fearless he is for offering for the ball. So again, that made a huge difference. And they've had injuries to cope with, but for a short spell, Cheryshev was bombing on. Geddes had a bad hernia. And they muddled around for a few months and then decided in sort of early winter, I've got to operate in this. Something that was screamingly obvious. They did operate it. And when he got back, gradually he found his form and his pace and he wasn't injured. I don't think there's marvellous feeling between Geddes and Marcelino. But between Marcelino and the rest of the squad, there's a really solid bond. And they worked for him. And they worked for each other. And that's why I agree with you. I think you were talking policy-wise. You like to see clubs not being sort of paper in the wind if somebody's shouting at them. Get rid of that manager. You don't want to see. You want to see clubs having a policy and an idea and character and the bollocks to say, no, fuck off, you're wrong. And that happened. But the dovetailing part of it was the squad and the manager and the technical staff. It's a while since I've seen something so unified and so determined. We will not be defeated. And here they are.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you can only probably bring about a turnaround in fortunes like that. I mean, I think a lot of things go into it, but I think if the if the squad and the management are unified. And Martellino's obviously taken these players with him, and they've stuck with him. They've had faith in him throughout this you know, the difficult part one of the season. But I mean, what have you seen that's kind of different in his character? Because I read some stuff about him leaving Villarreal, and I think he's obviously a guy that works at an incredible level of intensity, which can burn out not just players, but you know, the board and everyone around him. But has he found a way of connecting with players in this era of his career at Valencia that maybe brings the players with him more than it did in the past?
I think that's very feasible. I think that, you know, for those who are listening to the big interview and don't remember, when Marcelino takes over at Villarreal, they've started the season in the Champions League. They get pumped. They're not right. The squad building isn't right. They look paper thin. I remember one game I was at where Bayern Munich went to Madrigal, and a place where Madrigal had been really, really hard for teams to get anything out of, never mind win. And I think Bayern put 3 or 4 past them. That was at the beginning of the season. By the end of the season, they're relegated. And when Marcelino takes over, he marches them straight up again and into the Primera, and they do well. You know, they're finishing high up the table. I think they're fighting for a European place. And the last game of the season is one where Villarreal have to go to Sporting Gijón, and Gijón under Avalado need to win in order to stay up. And it probably sends, I'd guess, Rayo Vallecano down. And there's no way to gild the lily. We have to say, given that Marcelino is a Sporting Gijón supporter, and given that he just switched off his training intensity in the week leading up to the game, sent a team out that looked all right on paper as the 11, played without any intensity because he'd sort of said, lads, you know, you've had a good season, summer holidays start now, a week early. Sporting win. There's no question that the game is thrown, but Villarreal don't go there with the same intensity as you would have imagined if they were playing for a Champions League place or if it was the Cup semi-final. They just don't. And Marcelino's wife makes an injudicious comment on social media. And what happens is that during the summer, this simmers. It simmers with the president, Roig, at Villarreal. It simmers with the players. And by the end of that season, the captains have fallen out with Marcelino pretty intensely. And there is a point, and I would name one of them, Fazio, the Argentinian defender who subsequently left the club. There's a captaincy team of 3 main ones and one more junior one. And they go and they say to the president, well, it's the coach or it's us. We'll be asking to leave the club if you don't get rid of him. And Roig does get rid of Marcelino. And it's, you know, in the build-up, the season's probably 10 days away. And he's sacked. And there's an exchange of words. And I don't think there's any question whatsoever that in his time out of the game, which was relatively brief, until Matteo Alemany takes over at Valencia and says to Quique Setién, who's about to be appointed, which is not last summer, but the summer before, sorry, Quique, everything's changed at the last minute. You're not getting the job. Marcelino is. And by the time Marcelino comes in, I think you're right. I think you've pinpointed something that the experience of there being, he undoubtedly uses his intensity, whether it's in training drills or whether it's phone calls to a player about, remember you're playing against Jordi Alba in 3 weeks' time. Start thinking about it now that happens.
Yeah.
Being weighed 3 times a day. Just the intensity of his regime, although he doesn't play football, doesn't have a footballing concept, anything like Guardiola. It's Guardiola-esque. And I think that, you know, we use that as a yardstick for ultra, ultra intensity and the possibility of burning lesser players, lesser characters out. And I think that when he uses all these things for the good of the club, not because he's a martinet, not because he's a sergeant major or takes a sort of perverse pleasure out of, you know, there are managers who take pleasure out of poking players in the ribs, verbally or physically. You're not good, or you're not giving enough, or I want more from you, or you won't play in it. We've both seen it, and listeners will know this. That's not what Marcelino's doing. He absolutely believed that this sort of hellish foundry hot intensity that he brings to every minute of every day, and that he accepts he takes home with him, that he's obsessive, that he can't switch off. These things, he was shocked to find the degree to which that senior players in the VRL squad had turned against him, and it mellowed him. He took a pace back and reassessed, how can I achieve the same results? How can I keep the same objectives, but just temper my manner a little bit? And I think you're right. I think that that has happened. You know, the leopard doesn't change the spots completely. It would be a hard regime. Think of your worst ever geography teacher and when you used to get the belt, you know, for misbehaving. It'd be a little bit like that, but maybe the start comes out a little bit less on a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, it's mad to read about all the stuff that he does in terms of, you know, he's got a fitness coach that obsessively weighs the players every day, and it sounds like almost like a bit of a monastic regime at times, you know, in the way these players have to live their life. But it's interesting when you read the comments from players, like, you know, there's obviously a kind of realisation of the incredible demands that are put upon them, but there's also a realisation that he makes them better. He brings success, so there's this kind of, it's an incredible tension that exists, but it sounds like he's falling on the right side of it now, whereas in the past it would just be too much for certain people.
I think that's right, and I think that if we're you know, colouring inside the lines here and trying to make a proper picture, you know, that the intensity is married to the fact that he's a very, very good coach. He's very clear about the reason for his training regimes. And he does claim that all the physical side, the fitness side, the dietary side, that pertains to the team or his technical team around him. He says, look, I'm the manager, therefore I set the objectives, I steer the ship, and I'm the coach, therefore these are the drills I want on a daily basis. But the intensity of his regime is to promote the idea that he's got a crystal clear playing philosophy. It might sometimes be too strict. Let me give you an example. He's played 3-5-2 maybe twice in the last 2 years, once at Arsenal in the away leg of the Europa League semi-final, and it was utterly disastrous. The players had no idea what to do. Once, my feeling is that it was up at Eibar or Alaves, because he's wedded to 4-4-2. But the beauty of it is that he understands absolutely intrinsically how that must function, positionally where the two centre midfielders should be, how often and with what degree of balance or support the fullback should push up, which of the strikers is the nine, which of the striker must drop in behind and help serve as Parejo. Albeit that they got beaten against Arsenal, anybody who wants to go back to the second leg, first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, there's a point where Arsenal attack down the right, and I think is it Maitland-Niles, who's the right back, and he decides to go on a charge, and, you know, he'll be one of the key players, he'll have his night, no doubt, but he goes on a charge down the right, he gets shepherded into a position where his ball into the middle is nothing, and Neto picks it up. And Neto releases, and the way in which it's Cobra-like, the way in which Valencia don't even need to look a second time. They know the right back is out of position. The ball from Neto to the middle, whoever drops back, and it might well have been Coquelin, they drop back, it's fed to Geddes immediately, and Geddes is off down the left, and there's a cutback and a ball in, and the ball goes to, I'm pretty sure it was Kevin Gamero, who scores for the 1-0 goal. But if you look at the move from the second the ball reaches Neto's hands in goals, and the way in which it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, goal, right down the path. And that, I use that as an emblem of the, in Spanish it's called automatismos, the automatic things that he's taught Valencia to do so brilliantly. And I think that, you know, he is a coach who in due course will work in the Premier League. He's learning English, and will work in the Premier League simply because there's far bigger wages there. I think that he's an ambitious man, and I think that when he gets the right club and squad, he'll do something similar. And in my opinion, Marcelino will be a, you know, will be a top four finisher in the Premier League at some stage in the coming 3, 6, 8 years, because he's got the ability to make a team brutally hard to play against. Anyway, the long shot is that because Valencia's debt is still 500 million, and because they've had to be really clever about how they put this squad together, loans, cheap purchases, loans that they turn into buys after a year, like Geddes did, like Condobia did. This is not the absolute best squad that a club like Valencia could command, but he's taken the elements brilliantly and made them into a side which can win this cup final, which can... I'm not stating as a matter of fact that they start as favourites, given that Barcelona have won the last four. But I think that a combination of a hint of the momentum you talked about, the hunger that I'm talking about, the way in which they've got the majority of their players fit. Kondogbia might be available for the bench. Cheryshev won't make it. But the majority of the rest of the players are not only fit, but in good nick now. Arsenal showed that if you really... You know, if you play at them like Liverpool played at Barcelona, then you can go past them a little bit. But Barcelona won't do that, can't do that, haven't got the capacity to do that. So they go down to Sevilla, to the Benito Villamarín, where Scotland played Brazil in 1982, and it's home to Real Betis. And it's cruel, Martin. I just need to make this point. I know you watched the amazing, amazing scenes when Valencia put Betis out of the Cup semi-final, having drawn... They were 2-0 down after 70 minutes of the first leg of the semi-final to Betis. And Betis were playing for that most beautiful of nirvanas, where you host the cup final in your own stadium and you know, you're playing. And Betis were, I don't know, 90 plus 20 is 100. They were 110 good minutes away from getting there. And Valencia beat them in the 1-0 in Mestalla for a 3-2 victory. And, you know, it's... Since that night, that's when the momentum came, I think. That you know, you've seen the extraordinary Avenida Suecia, along where Manolo del Bombo, Manolo the Spanish drummer, his bar is there, looking straight into the main gates of the Valencia, and Avenida Suecia, Swedish Avenue, is the street that runs along the side of the remodeled Mestalla. And that night, flipping heck. Fans were there, the players were shouting down to them from the balcony, they were all singing together. It was something truly beautiful, and I think that's where the momentum comes from.
I do want to finish off by talking a little bit more about Barcelona. I mean, post-Liverpool, that was such a devastating aggregate loss, and they obviously had a couple of league games after that. I think they beat Getafe and drew with Eibar in the final game of the season. I'd be interested to know where they're at the moment. I mean, they've obviously got plenty to play for. I think this would be their fifth Copa win in a row, domestic double. Where do you assess they're at the moment after that kind of devastating reverse to Liverpool earlier this month?
Yeah, the external and some of the club debate is all about, you know, they've got a kind of football eczema. They're itching all over and they're scratching their skin raw. Xavi from afar is saying Barcelona won't win the Champions League again until they learn to dominate the play and take control of the play and keep the ball and be able to cope with teams like Liverpool or Paris Saint-Germain or Juventus or Roma, not by matching them physically, because that's what it's looked like to those who don't know the Barca philosophy. It's looked like physically Barcelona aren't at the level of the 3-0 Juventus or the 3 or 4-0 Paris Saint-Germain. I can't remember. I think 4. The pumping at Anfield. They're undoubtedly damaged by the fact that there's no Dembele and there's no Luis Suarez. Suarez's knee operation, Dembele pulled a muscle and won't be ready in time. Coutinho, for whatever that's worth, is probably going to be ready, at least on the bench, maybe a start. And I think that they will be, it will feel a little bit patched up and it will feel a little bit vulnerable to Barcelona fans. And you come right smack down to Piqué, Rakitic, Messi. I think, in that Sergio Busquets is having an odd season. On the ball, in close situations, fine. When he's run past, when he's robbed, he doesn't look quite able anymore physically. And that the motor is diminished. And therefore, the fact that he's probably, I say probably, going to play against Coquelin and Parejo means that he's not going to have central midfielders sprinting past him. But on either side, he's probably going to have Guedes and either Soler or Ferran streaming up and down. He's probably going to have Gaia streaming up and down, over and up superior in midfield for Valencia, I think. And therefore, I look at Piqué, Rakitic and Messi and say that if you're asking for an assessment of where they are, they will feel exactly the same about this cup final as if they'd won none of the last 10 instead of the last four. They'll feel exactly the same about this final, whether they'd gone to Anfield and won 4-0 or beaten 4-0. You know, these guys are different gravy, as good as they are. They're flinty tough. Piqué didn't look right at Eibar, in that he's had a brilliant season, one of the seasons of his career. And there were a couple of errors. As determined as ever, but there did look as if his attention had dropped because the Eibar game mattered really not a jot. Do I expect him to play like that on Saturday? No, I expect him to be towering. And I expect Valencia, for however quick they are, however well Parejo uses the ball, for however vertical and rapid their transitions of the ball are, I expect them to have to wrestle the cup out of the hands of Rakitic, Messi and Piqué. And that's where the value lies. I think it could be a tense game. I'd be a little surprised if it's a sort of five-goal thriller. I think that, you know, that once a team gets a purchase on the final, they may try to close up. But the fascination will be, can these big beasts who've won the last four, who are looking for a second double in the trot, hold off the up-and-comer? Because that's what Valencia looked like to me. And they might just, man for man, they won't be hungrier than Piqué, Rakitic or Messi. But man for man, I think Valencia might have the hungrier squad. And therefore it's going to be, I think it's a don't miss match.
Okay, that's our show, folks. Check out.
Whoa, folks. It's not. There's no way you're getting out of this without your own verdict and your own prediction. Don't even start to think that.
Do you know, it's an interesting one. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring match. I think it'll be tight. Part of me would love to see Valencia get a result, but I don't know. I think these big games come down to mentality, and it's a lot of the time, and it's hard to see a team with the kind of sheer experience and relentlessness that Barca have not winning this trophy for a fifth time. So I would take Barca by the odd goal.
There you go. You see, I asked because I wanted to know, and so did the listeners. And listeners, before Martin signs off, because he's very good at that, thank you for making us silver medalists in the British Podcast Awards last weekend. Even though not all of you were judges, we owe it to you.
Thanks again, folks. That's our show. Check out the game on Saturday night. I think we'll be back early next week to reflect on the match. Thanks for listening, and thanks, as always, to Graham Hunter. Woo!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.